The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Students of the Game. My name is Alex Bauman, and as always, I'm joined with my co-host, Nathan Gladwell. No AAA today, hop right into college football. Yet Auburn actually get their first SEC win under Hugh Freeze, because Peyton Thorne decided he wanted to actually be a quarterback this weekend. You had the world's largest cocktail party that game. Underwhelming for the most part. You had a big upset where a field goal post ended up in a lake somewhere, kind of like Tennessee last year. So we'll go over all those games. It's a couple more things. And if time permits at the end, we'll discuss some Halloween things, because this week, as we're recording the show, is Halloween. So let's hop right into the first game, Nathan, the Auburn game, because there's no Alabama game this past weekend. They were on bye, so nothing to talk about there until next week when they play LSU. So Auburn versus Mississippi State. Auburn ended up winning that game 27-13. And as I mentioned, it's the first conference win under Hugh Freeze at Auburn. So it's a big milestone for them. Look at the offense. I think for the first time all season, the offense looked coherent. Every facet, the blocking, the running, and now the passing and the pass catching. You look at Peyton Thorne at quarterback, 20-26, 230 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, 38 rushing yards. And surprisingly, Robbie Ashford really didn't get a lot of playing time this week. And I think that really did have a difference, Nathan. If you agree, do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, Robbie Ashford? Going down to one quarterback system is the obvious thing to do, because you bring in too many people, personnel is going to get screwed up, your play calling gets messed up, and just doesn't end well. But I thought that this worked out a ton better for him. And obviously, it shows in the stats.
Yeah, then if Robbie Ashford totaled 2 carries for 8 yards, and like you both said, didn't play that much, I think it really benefited Peyton Thorne not having to look over his shoulder every play and be like, okay, am I staying in? Is Robbie Ashford coming in? Am I even playing this drive? What's going on here? I think it let him get comfortable, especially in Auburn, just feel that atmosphere and get going. And he did. And that was a big reason Auburn ended up beating Mississippi State. If you look at Jarquez Hunter, I think this was his best game all season. 144 rushing yards, 26 receiving yards. I mean, when Peyton Thorne was kind of struggling towards in that second half, Jarquez Hunter was really that go-to guy, the player we were expecting him to be all year, kind of like a Peyton Thorne. Javarius Johnson was leading receiver with 59 receiving yards and a touchdown. Rivaldo Fairweather, 31 yards receiving. Shane Hooks, 27 receiving yards. And overall, 11 players had at least one reception. So it wasn't like Peyton Thorne was force-feeding Javarius Johnson the entire game or Fairweather. He was finding just whoever he could, the open guy and the zoner and the man defense Mississippi State was playing, and it's hitting him. And that was a big thing for Peyton Thorne, is just finding that open guy and reading that defense well. And he did that very well this entire game. And the Auburn offense, like I said, looked very coherent. If Auburn played like this in the Georgia game offensively, they would have beat Georgia. And if they would have played like this against Ole Miss, they would beat Ole Miss. And there's no debate for me about that. Both those games were extremely close. And I think the only reason they lost those games, outside of the Georgia game where they forgot Brock Bowers was on the field, but the offense was struggling in both those games. And if the offense played like this those games, I think it's an easy win for them. The defense, I didn't think it was great in that second half. Kind of let Mike Wright get going. The first half, they played very well. They didn't get any sacks, but that's been the theme all season for Auburn's defense, is they really struggle to get to that quarterback. They do force a lot of pressure on him. They just don't bring him down a lot. So I think the defense didn't play as well. But when the offense finds its footing, the defense really doesn't have to do everything they've been doing all season and have to carry that entire load. Look at Mississippi State. They didn't have their leading rusher, Woody Marks, or their quarterback, Will Rogers. Mike Wright filled in at the quarterback position. I think he played okay. 161 passing yards, a touchdown, and then an interception. Then he led the team in rushing with 63 yards. Mike Wright wasn't, I don't think he was that great at Vanderbilt. That's the reason he transferred. Mississippi State, I don't know what to think about him, Nathan. He's okay. I think he's a good fill-in quarterback. You want to run like a kind of like a Robbie Ashford in that regard, where he can just come in and run that read option play and stuff. He did struggle this game. The rushing attack really didn't give him much help. Tulu Griffin didn't do much either to help him out. So the Mississippi State offense is really held in check. The defense, not great. You let Peyton Thorne go off and you let Jarquez Hunter run all over you. Mississippi State, this team is in disarray right now. I don't see where they go from here future-wise with Zach Arnett at head coach. Nathan, what did you make of Auburn in this game? And then what does Mississippi State's future look like now?
It's a night and day difference between Auburn last week to Auburn this week. I don't know what happened during this week of practice, but obviously whatever they did, it worked, because Peyton Thorne comes out and he looks composed. He makes the right reads. It's not like he's just going to his first read. He's actually reading the field, seeing what the defense is doing, and then he's throwing the ball to the right person. So that was a nice change of pace for him. He looked very comfortable, and especially after the first few drives where I think that Hugh Freeze and the offensive coordinator really got him into a position to just make those comfortable throws. Once he got into a rhythm, and it never looked back in that scenario. I know he struggled a little bit in the second half, but you talk about Darquez Hunter taking over. I mean, 17 carries, 144 rushing yards. I mean, that's all you can ask of him. But overall, the offense has just improved so much since last week. And honestly, this is the best offensive performance they've had all year long. The question is, can they keep this pace? They go to Vanderbilt next week, and that's not a gimme game. But I think it's definitely a game where if Auburn plays like this, I don't think there's any discussion on who wins that game. Auburn's defense, for the most part, I know there are some situations in the second half where they kind of let up some easy throws to Mike Wright and let him escape the pocket and run a little bit. But they, for the most part, they would bend but not break, especially when it came down to allowing points. Only allowing 13 points in this game is incredibly hard to do in this time in college football. Only some of the greatest defenses can do it. I think Auburn's defense is really up there with borderline being great. I know Mississippi State's offense is not that good. Well, I'll talk about that here in a second, but Auburn's defense continues to pretty much play lights out in every facet of the game, except maybe getting sacks. They didn't get any sacks this game, but I think that more speaks on the versatility of Mike Wright escaping the pocket and being able to run. But overall, just a lot of playmakers on that defense, and if they continue to play the way that they play, I think Auburn will have a good rest of the season for the most part. Looking at Mississippi State in this game, Mike Wright having to fill in for Will Rogers, he's a developing quarterback, and on a team that's not doing so great this season, Zach Arnett in his first year as head coach, really tough position to fill in, and it's hard to take a team like this where you know there's talent on the team. It's hard to take it and say, this is what we need to do. This is our game plan every week. This is how we're going to execute it. Because most of the time, I think Zach Arnett has kind of failed the game plan correctly for some of these games. But with Mike Wright in at quarterback, I didn't think he necessarily had a bad game, but he didn't have a great game either. Throwing an interception was not great. In other times, I felt like the Auburn defense hurried him up a lot, which forced him out of the pocket, which pretty much led to him having 63 rushing yards. Like that's good. But when he's a leading rusher on the team, you can't establish a run game for the most part. I know Seth Davis did have 62 yards on the ground, but it felt like it's every single time they carried the ball, it was really just that gritty, maybe 2-3 yards a carry. And it's very hard to come by against an Auburn defense. Receiving game, it was decent. I really like the way that Xavion Thomas played in this game. 9 receptions, 112 yards and touchdown. But Tua Griffin really was just made non-existent by that Auburn defense. I think that was a big difference maker in the game. You can't get to one of your biggest playmakers on the team, you're not going to win the game. And that's 9 times out of 10. You come down to execution on third downs, 2 for 12. That's not going to win you a football game. This is pretty much a replica of the Penn State versus Ohio State. And your defense struggled. No sacks, 4 tackles for losses. You have 27 points to an Auburn team that has not seen the light of day on offense ever, and they finally get it. So I think you got to give Auburn a lot of credit for the way that they improved this week. My only question is, can they be consistent? Are we going to revert to the same Auburn offense that we had a week ago? But honestly, Hugh Freeze, got to give him some credit for the way they played this week.
Yeah, I think if they want to be consistent these upcoming weeks, they have the chance to. You talk about them playing Vanderbilt this upcoming weekend. I think that's an easy game to get the offense going, even though Vanderbilt's had a pretty good defense under Clark Lee. Arkansas, I mean, they're down in the dumps right now. I think that's a game you continue having good offensive performance. New Mexico State, there should be no reason why our offense doesn't play good. And then you come up to Alabama. That's going to be the real test if the defense or the offense can play well. I think if the offense plays like this against Alabama, then that game's going to be a very, very good game. But if we see the offense that came out against Ole Miss and Georgia in the previous weeks, like we said last week, Auburn can go ahead and forget about it. But I really hope the offense plays like this because I love a competitive Iron Bowl, regardless of who wins it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, UAB was on bye this past weekend. They play Florida Atlantic this upcoming weekend, so nothing to talk about there. Jacksonville State did beat FIU 41-16. They are now 7-2 and 5-1 in Conference USA, and they are second in the conference. But like I mentioned last week, they are not bowl eligible because of the rules regarding that, kind of like James Madison is. They had to wait a certain amount of years. I can't remember the total number. I want to say it's two.
It's 2 years. It's two.
Yeah, so I mean, they still got to wait 2 years. They got to wait this year and the next season, and they're in the bowl games. Hate that rule. We went over that last week. I mean, awful rule. They need to change it. Moving on to the world's largest outdoor cocktail party between number one Georgia and Florida. Georgia ended up winning that game 43-20. I think going into the game, a lot of people were expecting it to be a lot more competitive. Florida had really found their groove. Graham Mertz was playing really good football. I believe before that game, his dad had said it's going to be like a Joe Burrow coming out party, Nathan. And
That was some clown things to say.
Okay. I was making sure because I was researching before the show and I was like, there's nothing on this. Maybe I was just making something up.
He probably deleted it.
They probably did. But you look at Georgia here, Carson Beck without Brock Bowers has been playing really good football. A lot of people think he should be in the Heisman conversation. I don't know about that, Nathan. Do you think he should be in the Heisman conversation as of right now?
I mean, maybe top 10. I guess you can consider that Heisman conversation. So I guess he's in the top 10 for me.
Yeah, I think the way the Heisman conversation is going this year, it's anybody's award. Caleb Williams isn't playing great. Michael Penix has been up and down. Bo Nix, I mean, he's been pretty steady, but he had that couple iffy games here and there. They've lost to Washington. Jaden Daniels, for me, is like the only person that has been consistent all year. But the problem is LSU has two losses, and unless they run the table here and beat Alabama this weekend, win the rest of their regular season games, and somehow get to the SEC championship and beat Georgia, I don't see how you can give somebody that's not in the college football playoff the Heisman Award. They haven't done that yet, have they, Nathan? Except Caleb Williams last year. That was it.
Yeah, right? they have. So at this point, I personally think he deserves it. I think he's played very, very well. But there are still, what, 4 games left in the season? 5 games, yeah. Something like that? So, for Jaden Daniels, if he wants to win the award, it's time to win. It's going to be next week versus Alabama. That's a tall task. So, I don't know if he's going to be able to do it.
Right. Getting back on track here with the Georgia-Florida game. Carson Beck, 19-28, 315 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. Dejon Edwards, 96 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns. Kendall Milton, 55 rushing yards and a touchdown. Ladd McConkey really got back to being healthy this week, 135 receiving yards and a touchdown, and he was the SEC Offensive Player of the Week there. You look at the defense, 4 sacks, 8 TFLs of fumble recovery. That defense really got after Graham Mertz, really moved that pocket around, made him make some bad throws, bad decisions. I think the defense did a really good job holding that Florida offense in check. And you look at Florida, Graham Mertz. I don't think Graham Mertz is the reason Florida lost this game, even though he did have that fumble lost. He 25-34, 230 yards, 2 touchdowns, an interception, and added a rushing touchdown. But the offensive line for Florida could not block me running to the passer. I mean, they were just letting everybody come through. There was no way they were blocking Georgia's defensive front. The rushing attack didn't give him as much help either, but that was because Florida got down really early and couldn't rely on their running attack, which is what they've done all season, is kind of lean on that when they got ahead in games or when they were kind of in a battle, is rely on guys like Montrell Johnson, who had 82 rushing yards, and the other guy in Trevor Etienne who had 42 rushing yards. Really rely on those guys, and they just couldn't this game. I think that was their downfall, is they just couldn't say, okay, well, Graham Mertz can't really have time in the pocket because Georgia is getting after him. Let's get Montrell Johnson and Trevor Etienne going. Well, you can't do that when you're down 20-7 or something like that. There's just no way you can physically do that against somebody like Georgia. And then you look at their defense for Florida. Been awful all year long. Austin Armstrong, he's young. I believe he's one of the youngest, if not the youngest, coordinators in the country. I think he's got a way to go in that regard, just learning how to coach against teams like Georgia, Alabama, stuff like that. The defense hasn't played great all year. They got to get better on that end. But overall, Florida, I think this season there's a lot to build on. Continue to build under Billy Napier. It's not going to happen in a year. It's not going to happen in 2 years. I think next year is going to be the telltale sign of Billy Napier's tenure at Florida if he can do something good, because that'll be 3 years. And I believe coaches coming into a program should have at least 3 to 4 years to turn it around. So next year is going to be what decides it from Billy Napier in Florida. Nathan, what do you see from this game from Florida and Georgia alike?
Yeah, you got to talk about Georgia and the way they played without Brock Bowers. That was going to be the big question coming into this week and moving forward, really. Carson Beck, he got into a comfortable situation. The very first drive after Florida had went down and scored, Carson Beck, I think he was pretty much perfect on the way he threw the ball. I know they settled for three, but the way that he was able to command the drive down the field and really show that he was comfortable in the pocket, I think that basically what set Georgia up to win this game in such a dominant fashion. It really wasn't the running game early that did Florida in. It was the fact that they couldn't guard guys like Vlad McConkey. I mean, most of the time he was just wide open. There was one time he was just wide open down the seam, and he took it to the house for a touchdown. That's not the way you play against Georgia. That's not the way you should play against any top tier team. Because once these top tier teams get up on you big, you can go ahead and forget about it, because they know how to finish games. The real question was if Florida could respond in those scenarios, and they couldn't. Offensive line was garbage. It felt like every single second, Georgia's defensive line was in the backfield trying to make a play on Graham Mertz, which if you can't give your fuel general time in the pocket to make plays, even with what his offensive line did, he had a good game. So imagine if his offensive line had actually blocked for him. So it really comes down to the fact that Florida just did not measure up on the line of scrimmage against Georgia. I think that was a big difference maker, because as far as playmakers go, I think Florida has a ton of playmakers and they can really compete against a team like Georgia. But at the end of the day, Georgia's offensive line, defensive line is 10 times better than Florida's is right now. And Florida's defense is, their secondary is just not there. So I really didn't think this was a game that Florida was going to win. I thought it was going to be a little bit more competitive, but I didn't think it was going to end to win. I still think Georgia is capable of losing to a team like Missouri next week or a team like Ole Miss after that. So I think Georgia still has a little bit more to prove to me. I really did like the way that they ran the ball, especially in the second half, to kind of close out the game. But as far as Florida's defense goes, I think Missouri's is better. I think Missouri matches up a little bit better against a team like Georgia. So I guess we'll have to see. But this was just a great performance by Georgia as a whole to play without one of their biggest playmakers that they've had in the last few years. So,
yeah, I think Georgia's got a lot of teams that are going to test them ahead of them. You talked about Missouri being next week. You got Ole Miss coming up, Tennessee, and then you end the season with Georgia Tech. And as crazy that is for me to say, I think any of those four teams could really upset Georgia, even Georgia Tech, the way they've been playing these past few weeks of the season. I mean, they beat UNC this past weekend. So they beat Miami, even though they shouldn't really have the chance to beat Miami because Mark Cristobal is a clown. I mean, any of the four teams left on Georgia's schedule, it's going to give them problems, in my opinion, unless they play like this, they played against Florida. I think Georgia has a lot of teams in front of them. They just got to take it week by week, and we'll see if they're going to be in Atlanta. They're in the driver's seat. They haven't lost yet, so we will see. All right, then the upset of the weekend. Number six, Oklahoma loses to Kansas, 38-33. Like I said earlier, the goalpost in Lawrence, Kansas ended up in Potter's Lake after the game, kind of like Tennessee's last year. Thought that was kind of funny while watching them rush the field and just carry them out and not being angry the fact that my team lost this time, because I've been on that Kansas bandwagon since Leipold really sprung into life last season. You look at Oklahoma, Dylan Gabriel, really underwhelming, 14-19, 171 yards, no touchdowns. And an interception, which was a pick six on the first drive of the game, really kind of screwed Oklahoma there. But he did have three rushing touchdowns. Dylan Gabriel did, so that he did get something going on the ground. Then you look at Oklahoma on the ground as a team. They rushed the ball 55 times for 269 yards and five touchdowns. That was a little baffling to me, considering you had Dylan Gabriel at quarterback. He only passed the ball 19 times in this game. I'm not sure why he didn't get more chances to throw the football, if he was hurt or if they disliked what they saw.
It was raining and it was cold, so they went ahead and defaulted to the running game.
I know, but still, like when you're in a battle with Kansas for some reason and you think you can get something going with the passing game, you got to switch some up from Jeff Levy there. I think that was the main reason they ended up losing, is they didn't put the ball in Gabriel's hands a lot. They kind of just said, okay, let's just hand the ball off and let's go here and there. They did have success running the football. Like I mentioned, the defense for Oklahoma, I don't know where it was, non-existent. I don't know how you let Kansas with a backup quarterback run all over you, let the quarterback do what he wanted to do. No sacks from them, 3 TFLs. They did have 2 interceptions. So that was okay. But when you let Kansas score 38 points, what are we doing? You look at Kansas, snapped an 18-game losing streak to Oklahoma. Backup quarterback Jason Bean, 218 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions, but he had a rushing touchdown. Devin Neal, player of the game for them on offense, 112 rushing yards, and had the go-ahead touchdown, 55 seconds left. For Oklahoma, kind of just let him go in the end zone because they want to get the ball back and didn't have any timeouts left. So they said, okay, Devin Neal here, have a free touchdown, let us go respond and try to win the football game. Daniel Hinshaw Jr. Added 55 yards on the ground as well on a touchdown. Lawrence Arnold, receiving-wise, had 79 receiving yards. And the Kansas defense, I think, did an okay job against Oklahoma. We're holding them in check. Had a sack, 4 TFLs, a pass defended, and the pick six that I mentioned, and 2 fumble recoveries. So they were able to force those turnovers and capitalize on them. And that was really the downfall for Oklahoma, is those turnovers, the interception at the beginning of the game for six and the two fumbles. For Kansas, I mean, this is a huge win. At the beginning of the year, I projected them to get to the Big 12 championship. I'm not sure if that's likely at this point because there's a 5-way tie for first in the Big 12 between like Texas, Oklahoma. I believe Iowa State's in there for some reason. Mm-hmm. So the Big 12 is really wide open in my opinion, but it's probably going to come down to Texas and Oklahoma. Nathan, what did you think about Kansas snapping this 18-game losing streak and beating Oklahoma, kind of like Tennessee did last year to Alabama?
Yeah, you got to think about the circumstances of the game coming into it. 11 a.m. kickoff. That's number one. That helps your team out a lot. Oklahoma looked like they were sleepwalking into this game. But then you also come out and they went all the way down their first drive into the red zone and they went 4-on-4 10. They didn't get it. Oklahoma comes out immediately. Kansas's defense responds, picks Dylan Gabriel off and takes it for 6. So I think that was a big tone setter. And then you had some weird stuff go on. It was 38 degrees and it was raining, but there was also lightning. So there's a lightning delay for about an hour. So I think, you know, Kansas having that time to kind of just, I think even the playing field a little bit, Oklahoma probably didn't focus as much in the locker room than they probably should have. That's my opinion. I wasn't in there, so I don't know. But coming back out in this game, it was really like a punch back and forth. And I think every single time Oklahoma had a response, Kansas would then go and respond and take back the lead. And there were multiple times these teams went for 2 in this game. I don't even think any team converted a 2-point conversion. I might be wrong there. But I think the defense is really, really great in this game, even though it doesn't really show it. And I think that was helped out by the conditions of this game. But you got to give credit to Kansas, man, playing with a backup quarterback. I mean, he threw 2 really crucial interceptions. An interception with, like, I don't know, 2 minutes left in the game that I thought,
yeah,
well, that's it. I pretty much turned the game off. I flipped over to the Georgia Florida game at that point. But then I was looking at it on my phone. I was like, well, okay, so their defense got a stop, got the ball back. Well, let's see what they can do. And Jason Bean on the drive after, I thought he was going to be a little shooken up because he threw the interception. He commanded a drive down the field, found his open receivers, especially on like a 4th and 12, just went like 20, 30 yards to the air and got him all the way down inside the red zone. And then, of course, Devin Neal with a rushing touchdown to go ahead. But he really just played composed even after those 2 turnovers, which was huge in the game. As far as like quarterbacks you think that can beat teams like Oklahoma, I don't think before this week you would have mentioned Jason being on that list. But it really shows you how complete Kansas is as a team. And maybe if Jalen Daniels was healthy this season, that it could be the difference maker for this team. Because Alex, personally, your prediction of Kansas making the Big 12 championship, I don't think that's too far-fetched. I mean, you have a 5-way tie right now. It's going to come down to if Kansas can take advantage of some of the other teams that play. Oh, look, before the season started, the Iowa State game, that looked like an easy win, in my opinion, for Kansas. But
yeah,
Iowa State's been playing some good football. Texas Tech, I think that's going to be a battle. Even though Texas Tech hasn't been playing great, they have a lot of talent. And then Kansas State, that's a fire right there. And then Cincinnati to finish it off. So it's going to be hard the rest of the season to see if Kansas can make the Big 12 championship. They got a lot of tests in front of them. But let's not forget that Oklahoma and Texas, two teams have some good tests in front of them. So honestly, it's pretty up in the air right now who's going to finish. But at this point, you talk about college football playoff and some of these Big 12 teams, they might have just like taken themselves out of the race with this game right here.
Yeah, they definitely have. I mean, I think Texas still has a big chance here. I think if Texas and Oklahoma went out and whoever wins that game, we're probably in the college ball playoff, depending on what happens with the SEC game and all that stuff. I don't think you can not put Texas or Oklahoma in there, but we'll see how the rest of the season goes. It's all up in the air. Some other upsets this week. Yeah, Georgia Tech, as I mentioned earlier, take down number 17, North Carolina, 46-42. Second straight loss for the Tar Heels, and they fall to 6-2 and 3-2 in the ACC, basically playing themselves out of any contention for a college ball playoff or New York Six Bowl. So good job, Tar Heels, start out really good. And then you get to this later part of the season and crap your pants. Thank you, Mac Brown. You also had Arizona actually complete an upset, beat number 11, Oregon State, 27-24. Oregon State tried a fake field goal at the end of the half and didn't get it, and they lose by 3. So Jonathan Smith there at Oregon State, not sure what you're thinking, buddy. I don't know. Good for Arizona, man, because it feels like every week we were talking about Arizona being – with so close to get upsetting a team. I mean, all three of their losses, Mississippi State, Washington, and USC, were within one score. And it just felt like, man, they just need this. They're almost there. And they finally do it here, upsetting Oregon State. So good shot for Arizona with a freshman backup quarterback in the game. And he's been playing great football, Noah Fifita. Some other storylines. Number 8, Oregon demolished number 13, Utah, 35-6. And snaps the Utes 18-game home winning streak. So good thing for Oregon there to do that. Keeps themselves in that playoff race with just that one loss to Washington. They control their destiny as well. Talking about Washington, they escape a scare from Stanford to win 42-33 behind Michael Penix Jr., 369 passing yards and 4 touchdowns. Number 10, Penn State. Defense recorded a safety on Indiana's final drive to help the Nittany Lions sneak out with a 33-24 win against the 2-6 Hoosiers. Not sure why Penn State was in a battle with Indiana. A little bit worrisome there. Don't think Penn State's doing good things. They want to try to get to the college ball playoff, struggling to beat a team like Indiana. Talking about moving to the ACC, you got even with QB Riley Leonard back from injury, number 20 Duke is shut out by number 18 Louisville, 23-0. Louisville running back Jawar Jordan ran for a career high 163 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns. So Louisville continues to play good football outside of that slip up they had earlier in the season. Number 23, UCLA beat Colorado 28-16. Buffalo's quarterback Shedeur Sanders was sacked 7 times. And in the postgame press conference, head coach Deion Sanders said he'll get new linemen to protect Shedeur. The quote was, "The big picture, you go get new linemen. That's the picture, and I'm going to paint it perfectly." So kind of Deion telling his offensive linemen, like, hey, you want to start playing better? I'll just go to the portal and get some new linemen, because they are playing like crap the entire season. And it's earlier today, they signed some JUCO transfer for the upcoming season. So Deion's already living up to his word and going out and getting more linemen to help out Shedeur next season. Due to a failed two-point conversion attempt, number 24 USC avoided losing their third straight game and grabbed a 50-49 win over California. I don't know how USC struggles to beat California. Alex Grinch might as well go ahead and start packing his bags, find somewhere else to live, because dude will not be back at USC next year. And if he is, there needs to be some serious ramifications for that, because there's no reason you should let California score 49 points against you when they only score 10 against Auburn. That's awful. Lincoln Riley and Alex Grinch. And then the last thing, Clemson fell to 4-4 on the season after they lost to NC State 24-17. Clemson quarterback Cade Klubnik, 33 of 50, 263 yards, no touchdowns, and two interceptions. Nathan, Clemson's 4-4. Upcoming, they got Notre Dame, Georgia Tech, UNC, South Carolina. I don't know how that's going to go. All those games are very losable. Is it time for Dabo Swinney to go ahead and go?
It's a tough conversation to have when you know that Dabo Swinney has won national championships for Clemson, and then all of a sudden he's like, I'm not going to use the transfer portal, and he comes out in games, and now all of a sudden Clemson is 4-4 and could very well lose the last four games of their season. But I didn't think that was a conversation we were going to be having anytime soon. I mean, if we were having this conversation, I think Dabo Swinney would already be like unplugged from the program pretty much. I mean, this is awful. There's no excuse to lose to a team like NC State with the amount of talent you have. I mean, going forward, Notre Dame, I think they lose that game. Georgia Tech, the way Georgia Tech's been playing, very well could lose that game. UNC, I don't know. That's a toss-up right now. In South Carolina, I think that's probably the most winnable game. And, gosh, I didn't think I was going to be saying that because I thought South Carolina was going to play a lot better this season. But I think that's a winnable game for Clemson. But as far as is it time for Dabo to go? I don't think right now it's a time. But you'll get this offseason if he is still refusing to use the transfer portal, and if he's refusing to kind of modernize with the rest of college football, you're going to have to say, here's this new clause, add to your contract. If you don't win a certain number of games this season, you can go ahead and go or retire or something, because Clemson as a program, they should not be playing like this. I know a lot of Clemson fans are frustrated, and rightfully so. I mean, 4-4 when just a few years ago you were competing for a national championship. It's baffling.
Yeah. I think either he's got to dive into that transfer portal or he's going to have to go and walk out the door. He's got to adapt, Nathan, like you said, or he's just going to be a casualty of it. And I think that's crazy for me to think. I would have thought Dabo, being the personality he was, would be one of the guys that would have actually embraced the NIL and the transfer portal much more than a guy like Nick Saban has. That's really baffling to me. He's got it. He's got to do it, or he's going to lose his job. I don't think Clemson can afford to let him sit around and just continue to recruit high school players. He does a great job at that, but at this point in time in college football, you can't just depend on high school seniors coming in being freshmen to help your team. It's just not going to work out. We've seen it this year with Clemson. They continue to play these freshmen, and it's just not working out. Cade Klubnik's going to be gone next in 2 years. Will Shipley's probably gone this year. There's just not a lot there for Clemson. He's got to adapt and change, or he's going to be gone. Also, some news, Iowa offensive coordinator Brian Ferentz is not expected to be back next season, with an offense only averaging 19 points per game of the required, I believe, 25 points per game. So Iowa fans are definitely rejoicing now as Ferentz is no longer going to be back. Not sure about his dad as the head coach. Probably will be back because the way he's done at Iowa there. I mean, they're consistently in the conversation for the Big Ten championship there. All right, and just quickly before we get out of here, because it is Halloween week, What is your least favorite and most favorite Halloween candy to have?
Gosh, that's a hard question. You know how many candies there are in the world, Alex?
I know.
Picking a favorite, I don't know, least favorite? Gosh. I don't like snow caps. I don't like snow caps. Yeah, I don't know.
At least you didn't say candy corn.
No, I like candy corn. as far as favorite goes, I don't know. Snickers are good. Gosh. I mean, honestly, Reese's very good. I don't know. It's a real toss-up. I'll probably end up going with Snickers for now. But it changes from time to time.
Yeah. For me, my least favorite, I know this might be a little bit un-American for me, is I'm not a big M&M's guy. I just really am not. When you used to get them for Halloween, they would melt in the bottom of the bag. And then you'd pull them out and there'd be like eight of them connected to each other. They'd be all nasty. And even if they're not like that, I'm still not a big M&M guy.
That's just a South thing. Imagine if you're trick or treating in the like Midwest or in the North, and you got M&Ms.
Even when they're not melted together, when I go to the store, I'm not a big M&M guy. I'd rather go get some Sour Patch Kids or something like that. I never been that M&M person. Like I said, it might be un-American of me. It's just not a big fan there. My most favorite thing or candy would probably have to be Three Musketeers or Sour Patch Kids. I think those are my go-to. I can't get away from those. Moving on from candy, Nathan. Last thing before we get out of here. Favorite Halloween movie you go watch?
Actually, I've been watching all the Friday the 13th movies as you know, kind of Halloween gets closer. And I'd say probably my favorite, because I think all time favorite like killer is definitely Jason Voorhees. But I kind of add to one movie, and that's Friday the 13th, New Blood. It's the one with Tommy Jarvis. I think that one is probably going to be my all-time favorite. But you know, we've seen a lot of different horror movies. We went and watched FNAF.
That's not a horror movie. Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's technically is classified as a horror movie, but
it's not scary.
It's not scary for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. Don't get your hopes up. But there are a lot of good movies out there, and honestly, like I need to start expanding more of like going into some of these scarier films. I think originally as a kid that kind of like freaked me out a little bit, but now like when you're older it's a little bit different. You're kind of looking to be scared.
Yeah, for me, I think my favorite Halloween movie of all time is gonna have to be the first Scream. Even though I knew going in who the killers were, I think if I didn't know going in, it'd have made the movie about 1,000 times better. But even though I knew who they were, it was still really good. And I still watch it to this day. Every Halloween, it's my go-to thing. We're also down and watch the first Scream over and over again. All right, it's all time we have for today. Thank you for listening and watching, students of the game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.